When we return from breakfast and a trip to student health, Sorensen's on my front porch. I can guess what he wants to talk about. I sent some texts to get him off campus, but because it was a last-minute move, I left him hanging in Boston on his own with no explanation. He and I will need to have our conversation out of Avery's earshot. I park the car in the garage. When she gets out of the Porsche, she spots the empty gas can that's still lying on its side on the floor. Shane, is that from the other night? The one the arsonist dropped? Yeah, don't touch it. You'll stain your clothes. We should give it to the police and make a report. Let's talk about it later. I've got company. She tucks her hair behind her ear and nods. I saw Eric. I didn't realize he was coming by. I don't answer as I put a hand on her back and usher her toward the house. When we get to the porch, Sorensen stands. Morning. Hi, Avery says in return. Do you want coffee? No, we'll talk out here, I say. You go in, Ave. She glances between us, looking like she wants to argue. Instead, she complies, disappearing behind the front door. Once the door's closed, Sorensen leans his massive bulk against the bricks. So, last night. Yeah, thanks for coming to Boston to meet me. Sorry I had to cancel. The hotel room was all right? Sorensen's pale blue eyes study my face. Why'd you keep me in play all night? Lowering my voice, I say. I thought getting out of town was a good idea for both of us. He glances around, verifying no one's nearby. The TB accident? I nod. I send Sorensen to Barteratch's class to intimidate him, and Sorensen stepped in to lend a hand during the frat party fight. If I'd realized that things would escalate to the point of my putting a contract on Barteratch, I never would have involved Eric. I don't want him pulled in as a suspect if the police realized that what happened to Barteratch wasn't an accident. If someone looks, the text chain is suspect, Sorensen says. No, it's fine. A police investigation couldn't do anything useful with my luring him to Boston and then blowing him off. Schedules change. There's nothing remotely related to Granthorpe or Barteratch in the texts. I don't mean the ones from last night. I mean the earlier ones. Yeah, those early ones could have been a problem, but not with our alibis in place. Should be fine. Sorry I didn't meet up to lay things out. Avery was with me. He glances at the front door. Seems like the girl's never out of your sight anymore. True statement. My gaze cuts to the window where the shade sways. Avery must have looked out. You've got her in your house? You trust her? I suck on my bottom lip a moment and then shrug again. His interests are tangled with mine, so I appreciate the mild tone with which he questions her loyalty. I wish I could tell him there's nothing to worry about when it comes to Avery being installed in my house, but I can't swear to it. I can resist everything but temptation. The corner of Sorensen's mouth twitches, and he shrugs his brows. The most dangerous food is wedding cake. That draws a chuckle from me. Is that a wild quote, too? He shakes his head. Thurber. His giant hands push against the brick, setting him forward on his feet. The money was higher than expected this month. Profit sharing. Officially, Sorensen's on my payroll as a shelf stocker at a convenience store I own. It's one of the fronts I use to launder our money. After some careful vetting, I brought him into my illegitimate businesses a year ago as a minor partner. His cut is normally 15%, but I paid him more this time. Of sorts. I gave you an extra 10% from my share. The past couple of weeks, you've gone beyond what we agreed to. So let's call it a Christmas bonus. His light brown brows rise. That help was for blood's sake. He runs a hand through his hair that's well into Lion's Mane territory these days. It's a good thing the football season ends soon. For family, favors are free. So you've said and proved yourself. Yeah. When he was strapped for cash as a freshman, both Declan and I floated him loans. For us, Sorensen started out as an investment. But that's not what he is anymore. Now he's a partner whose debts were paid long ago. Then don't consider it a bonus. Call it a Christmas gift. If you say so. Briefly flashing a grin, he shrugs. I'll get going. Gotta contemplate all the unwise ways to spend that money once football's over. Sorensen goes down the porch steps, and I nod my goodbye when he's behind the wheel of his SUV. Once his truck is out of sight, I head into the house. Avery's waiting just inside, her eyes filled with kitten curiosity. "What's going on?" she asks. "Nothing. You gonna change clothes?" I catch her hips, drawing her to me. "If so, I'll help with the unzipping." My hand comes to rest on the back of her slacks. Avery brushes my fingers away and steps back. "When will you trust me with the truth?" "How's never," I think. "The truth about our relationship? I told you, ask me anything." Avery shakes her head. "Come on, Shane. I'm not just keeping secrets to protect myself and my partners. An equally important issue is that there's no way I want the things I do to end up on her conscience. Baby, listen. If you go to work for a tech company with proprietary secrets, I'm not going to ask you to open the corporate files so I can read them. It's the same for my business." Avery frowns. "Except my company won't be doing anything illegal. Who says mine is?" She shrugs. "I feel like there are important things you're not telling me. Things I should know." I don't respond. She sighs. "Okay. I need to study. First final is tomorrow." My arm corrals her. "Give me a kiss first." Avery moves closer and kisses me. Her lips are petals soft and sweeter than honey. I know her curiosity is a problem, but that innocence of hers is impossible to resist. She is impossible to resist. Sorensen and Declan both question whether I can trust her. That's not even a consideration anymore. The stage I'm at now is ride or die.
Chapter 28. Avery. Shane's asleep when I slip from his bed in the middle of the night. I can't sleep because I've gotten wrapped up in campus posts about Casanova. And I'm thinking about how shady it is that the gas can from the arson attack is still sitting in Shane's garage. Casanova could be the one who started the fire. If so, the gas can should have already been turned over to the police, in case there's forensic evidence that matches something collected from the abduction crime scenes. If Shane's aversion to the police allows Casanova to remain free longer than he should, I will not be all right with that. Turning in the gas can is something I'd be happy to do on my own. But the police would probably want to visit the house, at least to look at the exterior. For multiple reasons, I really need to know how serious Shane's criminal endeavors are. On top of which, I'm annoyed, because he's shamelessly creating a double standard. While Daniel and I were working online to finalize our project for submission, I left my phone unattended. When I walked into the kitchen to grab it, I found Shane going through it. His claim that he needed to check my calendar to make holiday travel plans may have been true when he unlocked the phone. But at a glance, I could see he was reading my text threads too, which tracks with my suspicion that Shane thinks it's acceptable for him to keep secrets from me, but not for me to have secrets from him. Scowling now, I take Shane's phone from the nightstand and tiptoe out into the hall. I don't know his code, but I've watched his fingers move as he swipes a figure of eight pattern to unlock it. It takes three attempts for me to get in. I go into the text messages and immediately know that he must routinely delete his threads. There are only two open message chains, one with Declan and one with neighbor 8353. From the house number, I assume that's the neighbor next door. I open the Declan thread. There are only a handful of messages, all from earlier in the evening tonight. Shane, what do you say to upping job description and pay for guy who stocks shelves? I trust him with inventory. You? Declan? Yeah, agreed. Why now? Shane, tell you when I see you. Declan, sure. Word came down, date set on celebration. What condom brand you want there? Shane, hole in your schedule tomorrow to talk? 10 A? Declan, 11:30 all I got. Shane, I'll make it work. See you your place. Declan. Sure. I remain frozen for several heartbeats, rereading Declan's second message. Why does anyone need to know Shane's favorite brand of condoms? For a moment, I try to believe it's about New Year's Eve and having condoms on hand for Declan's house guests as some sort of creepy amenity. But I'll be on the pill by then, so Shane won't need to wear one. And I don't believe Shane would have Declan's staff buying his condoms anyway. Also, when Declan writes that word came down, it makes it seem like someone else is calling the shots. Date set. What kind of celebration requires a supply of condoms? An orgy? I open the neighbor thread absently. There are a couple greetings, and there's a video. After a second, I realize the clip was sent in response to Shane's request for security camera footage during the neighborhood canvassing. I watch the video, freezing and zooming in when I think I recognize the person being filmed. It's Todd Bartarach. An icy chill runs through me until I remember that Todd's not a danger to us anymore. I stare down at the video as it replays. Then I lower the phone, staring at the wall. Too bad she didn't have a monster to avenge her. Those were Shane's words about my mom's assault. And when I asked what a monster would do, he said, monster things. Like causing a near-fatal car wreck? No. It was a single car accident. And Shane wasn't anywhere near campus at the time it happened. Shane is so smooth, though. And he has those ties to the Irish Mafia. On Saturday, he showed his grandfather a video clip of something. I look at the time his neighbor sent the video, Saturday during brunch, right after which Shane announced he wanted to stop by his grandfather's on our way out of Boston. Could Mr. Sullivan have sent someone to deal with the man Shane suspected of trying to kill us? I shake my head. It's too crazy. The fire just happened 3 days ago. They wouldn't have had time to retaliate this quickly, would they? And anyway, it was a one-car accident, not some hit-and-run. Unless someone ran him off the road and kept going, or tampered with his car. No. Then I think about Todd's black eye the morning after he threatened me on the video call. Shane never left the house that night. He sent someone to intimidate Todd, and then had Eric Sorensen watch over me the next day to be sure I wasn't hassled. There were no delays, no long planning sessions. Shane dealt with that situation immediately, and by doing so, he proved he doesn't need to hurt anyone directly. He can arrange for it to happen. My mouth goes bone dry. I need a glass of water, but I can't seem to move. The uncertainty is killing me. Was Todd's crash an accident or something Shane arranged? And does that mean that Todd is Casanova? We didn't find a flower on the night of the fire, but the arsonist was interrupted in the middle. I open the gallery on Shane's phone. I want to see if there are any more videos of Todd from Shane's neighbors or anyone else. I find a video of my project presentation and a picture of me from the Shamrock Cafe that I didn't realize he took. I exhale a little sigh because it's sweet that he has these. I pause, feeling suddenly awful for rummaging through his phone. If Shane knows Todd tried to kill us and that he's Casanova, then Todd had to be stopped. Not just as revenge, but because he would have gone on to hurt other girls. I lower the phone and almost swipe to relock it. But if there is any other evidence that Todd is Casanova, I want to know. I return to the gallery. I discover some photos of Shane's house from the night of the fire and the next morning, but no more of Todd. Switching to the download file folder, I look for videos. There's only one, and the file name is insurance_AK. Maybe some video he took to file an insurance claim related to the fire? No. Because the date is from before Friday. I click on the video and freeze. It's me. And Shane. Someone took a video of us in his living room? There's no sound, but the picture is clear. My mind races and my heart hammers as I try to piece together when this was. The shirt I'm wearing in the video is the one I had on the day after I found the rose in my bed. I watch as I walk over and grab a pillow from the couch. I drop it at Shane's feet and then lower myself to my knees. Oh my God. The roaring in my ears is deafening. The clip continues to play until I jab my finger to stop it. I'm too slow. The last frame is one of me with his cock in my mouth. My breath catches in my throat. I can't breathe. I stumble into the guest bathroom thinking I'm going to be sick. I drop to my knees at the toilet, my mouth filling with saliva as I break out in a sweat. I spit into the bowl over and over, but I don't vomit. For several moments, I'm too sick to move, but my mind continues to race. It dawns on me that there was no one lurking in a corner filming us. We were completely alone. There's a hidden camera somewhere in Shane's living room. He's the one who recorded me and then downloaded the video onto his phone. God damn him. Was this video just for himself? Or did he forward it to other people? I delete the video as tears fill my eyes. Fucking asshole. I check the gallery and delete the other video and picture of me. Scrolling back, I make sure there's nothing else. Of course, the video in the living room was downloaded. That footage could be in cloud storage somewhere, and probably is. Another wave of nausea hits me. My very first time giving anyone a blowjob, and the guy records it. He can use it against me anytime. If he posts it online with my name, it will be searchable by potential employers. Saliva fills my mouth again and my stomach heaves. For several minutes, I retch, feeling as ill as I've ever felt in my life. Suppressing a sob, I lie on the cold tile until stillness helps quell the nausea. Finally, I'm steady enough to wipe my face with a cold cloth. Then another thought hits me. Shane could send the video to my mom. See, Sherry, as I said, Avery's the one who chases me, not the other way around. She's 18, so I finally gave her what she's been dying for, a taste of my cock. The phone drops onto the bathroom tiles as I stumble to my feet. I have to get out of his house right fucking now.
Chapter 29. Shane. When I wake before dawn, I'm alone in my bed. There's no light coming from my bathroom, so she's somewhere else in the house. Come on, Ave. What are you doing? She could be studying. If she is, I wish she'd just brought her laptop to bed. I wonder if Smith Hall posted a grade for the presentation. Avery wants to hit him up for the recommendation letter immediately, assuming he gives her a high score. He will. She killed it. I smile. It was tough to see her nervous before the presentation when there was no way for me to help, but when she presented, I decided it was better she did it all on her own. More for her to be proud of. Ave, I call out. There's no answer. Raising my voice so she'll be able to hear it downstairs, I repeat, Avery! The house is silent. Uneasiness hits me like a splash of cold water. I reach for my phone to be sure there was no security system alert while I slept. The phone's not on the nightstand. I roll out of bed and drag on a pair of jeans. Avery! In a matter of seconds, I'm scouring the house, but she's nowhere to be found. My phone is on the floor of the guest bathroom, and I check it quickly to be sure she didn't try to make a 911 call. No, the call log's empty. I open my text messages. There's one from her that's waiting to be opened. Thank Christ. If she went out for coffee or on a walk by herself before dawn, I'm gonna give her hell about it. Avery. Saw video of myself. Insurance, AK. For several seconds, it doesn't register. Then it does. Fuck. It's a gut punch. A picture of her watching it and feeling the exact same thing. I wish she'd confronted me immediately instead of taking off. Then I could have told her the truth. I kept it as insurance but planned to delete it after she told her mom we're together. I try to call her, but she lets me go to voicemail. I don't leave a message. Where is she now? Campus? Alone? My fingers jab the screen as I type, Shane, where are you? Call me. Avery. Who else has seen it? Who else has seen it? What the fuck? Like I'd shown that to other people? Shane. No one. Kept it as proof of consensual relationship. At beginning, I thought I needed it. Just insurance. Not for fucking show and tell. Would not do that. You can't think I would. She doesn't respond. Shane, where are you? I don't want you outside alone in dark. Let me come get you. Let's talk. Avery. I don't want to. I'm safe. Leave me alone. Shane, for how long? Avery. Don't come to Colorado. I don't want to see you. I call her, but again she lets the call go to voicemail. Grimacing, I blow out a frustrated breath. Shane. It was from first day. Swear I was gonna delete it. Avery. But you didn't. You delete things every day, but you kept that over and over and over. Shit. I stop walking and shake my head. How does she know I delete my logs and threads regularly? That's a habit of mine in case my phone is ever compromised. I back out to the main page of my messages. Obviously, she could tell I clear things away because there's almost nothing there. I erased old threads last night. The only things left are the video of Barterach from my neighbor and my last text with Declan. Oh, fuck. Another landmine. There's that text about the party at the Dark Knights Club where Deck talks about condoms. If she read it, she must be wondering why the hell I need a stack of condoms for a party I haven't mentioned. Rubbing my forehead, I grimace. I was never going to fuck any random girls in the DK Club, even if Avery wasn't in the picture. Running train is not my thing. I checked the thread to see what I said in response. Yeah, fuck. Nothing to get myself off the hook. That's a problem with playing my cards close to my vest in emails and text messages. If I'd texted that my condom brand wasn't relevant, she'd have been clued into the truth. I head into the guest room and open the closet. A lot of Avery's stuff is gone. Probably as much as she could carry. I've got to figure out where she went. No matter how pissed she is, she's too smart to have taken a bus back to campus in the dark. It's still early as hell, but Ethan's sometimes up at 4 or 5 in the morning, working. I open my contacts to call him. He answers immediately. Morning, son. Hey, Dad, where are you? In my car. Headed here? No. Have you already been here? Yes. Shit. He came and took her, and I fucking slept through it. The silence stretches between us as I wonder what she told him. Is Avery with you? Yes. Do you want to talk to her? His tone is neutral, which likely means she didn't tell him much. I want to talk to her more than anything in the goddamn world. But we can't have the conversation we need to have while she's sitting next to Ethan. No, I'll talk to her later. Okay. There's a beat. Is there something else on your mind, Shane? No. I lie. I don't like that Avery went running home to them instead of staying to work things out with me. I don't like that she broke into my phone. But more than anything, I don't like that she found that video and left me because of it. I should have deleted it sooner. Or better yet, never downloaded it to my phone in the first place. I give it a few hours before I try to call Avery again. She doesn't pick up, which is no surprise. I decide to leave a message, which means I get to hear her voice, soft and sweet, and insidious. I should be hearing that voice in person today. After the beep, I speak, working to keep my voice level. Hey, I know you're pissed. You have a right to be. I shouldn't have allowed that recording to exist. It's gone now for good. Source file erased. And just so you know, there's only one camera in the house. It's in the living room. And it's been off since the morning after you arrived. Today, I erased everything that was in storage, so there are no recordings of you. Zero. I pause, rubbing my thumb over the side of the phone. I would never have used that video to hurt you. It was insurance because I thought you might try to hurt me. I know you wouldn't. Not intentionally, but I realized that later. I shake my head in frustration. Come on, Ave, call me back. We're not leaving things like this. And you know we should talk in private, not in the middle of my dad's house with both our parents around to overhear us. Let me come get you. We'll go somewhere to talk. Afterward, if you want to stay in Boston, rather than coming back to my place, I'll leave you there. I start to say something else, but the voicemail box cuts me off. It's fine. I've said enough. I end the call and glance at the clock. She's probably getting ready to take one of her finals. It'll be at least a couple of hours before I hear from her. Time to get on with my day. I've got my own school work to wrap up. So I do. All day. Avery doesn't call me back until 10 at night, which I know means we're not going out somewhere to talk face to face. Still, a live conversation is better than texts. I turn off the television and sit back on the couch. Hey, I say when I answer. You listen to my message?
Yes.
And? There are a couple beats of silence before she says,
And? That's all. I listened to what you had to say.
Her tone signals that none of her anger has worn off. I'll come in the morning. Tell me what time. She exhales a scoff.
No, no way.
Why not?
Look, it's more than just the video, which I don't really believe you planned to keep to yourself. You made it portable for a reason, Shane. It could have stayed in storage with other files from that camera. That would have been plenty of insurance if you really thought I would lie and accuse you of something, which I also doubt you believed. I think you had it on your phone so you could pull it out to show my mom if she pissed you off. Maybe you intended to show it to someone else, too. Declan, or whoever. A lot of guys swap pictures and videos of girls they've hooked up with. There was a Beta House scandal last year, right? With a scoreboard, or whatever. It's a common thing. I'm not some douchebag frat boy. But I don't snap back because I don't want to add fuel to the fight. Instead, I keep my voice low. I didn't show it to anyone, and I wasn't planning to. You made it portable for a reason. Why?
I don't know. I say honestly.
I didn't realize we'd been recorded until late on the first night you were here. I tapped the clip to watch it. And a copy downloaded. That's it. As soon as I realized what the camera caught on video, I went downstairs and unplugged it.
I hope that's true. I grind my teeth together. Are you skeptical? Really? You know me. Do you honestly think I would let someone else watch you like that? Is that at all consistent with how I am when it comes to you? Like I'd be happy to share you? Give me a fucking break, I say with as mild a tone as I can muster. I want you to myself. Always have. Which you know.
I was shocked and felt sick when I saw that video on your phone. I still am,
she says softly, which is like having a knife thrust into my heart. It was a mistake. And I'm sorry.
Even if I could forgive you for the video, that's not the only issue.
Her voice is so soft I almost can't hear it. I press my phone's volume button to raise the sound all the way. What else, Avery? Tell me.
You've got a lot of secrets. The locked room and whatever else. Things I don't even have a clue about. I can't be with someone who has so much to hide.
Look. There are things I know. Shane, I know. She draws in a breath and exhales. When she speaks again, her voice is measured.
I'm sure you keep secrets for a really good reason, but I can't handle it. I was wrong to break into your phone, but I couldn't stop myself. It's better for you and for me if this thing between us ends now.
I don't want it to end.
We don't trust each other. It's already over.
My head tips back, so I'm staring at the ceiling.
There are a lot of things I could say, but I doubt they'd be productive at the moment. It'll be a lot easier if we don't text or call each other. To give ourselves a chance to get over this, I roll my eyes. We spent 2 years trying to avoid each other after a blowout, and it did zero fucking good to help us get over each other. Okay? She whispers. Goodbye, Shane. The call ends, and I toss my phone to the other end of the couch. Rubbing my forehead, I shake my head. There's no way our relationship's over. I don't know what, if anything, could break us apart, but it definitely hasn't happened yet. Whatever I need to do to bring her around is what I'll have to do.
Chapter 30. Avery. It's 9 at night, 2 days after my last conversation with Shane, and I'm sitting on my bed at Ethan's quietly crying. I was 100% right to end things with Shane, but that doesn't mean I can go more than 5 minutes without thinking about him. And nights are when I miss him the most. There's a knock on the door, and my mom says, "Sweetheart, can I come in? Just a sec." Shoving my laptop over, I get out of bed to grab a tissue. Quickly wiping my eyes doesn't fix them. They're really red, and I look tired. Pitching the tissue in the trash, I walk over and open the door. "I brought tea," Mom says, holding up a mug. "Ginger peach." It's my favorite, and I take it. "Thanks. Can I come in?" I shrug, glancing around for an excuse to remain alone. After Ethan caught me crying in the yard, he and Mom have been hovering constantly. I've told them repeatedly that everything's fine, but convincing them with words is apparently not possible. "What's up?" I ask. "Ethan said you got good news about your presentation?" I nod, unable to muster much enthusiasm. "Smith Hall gave me best in class for it. Thanks again for your help." He agreed to write me a strong letter of recommendation for the internship. I submitted my application, so fingers crossed. "That's great. And your last final is done?" "Yeah, I took them both online. The teachers are good with that because of Casanova." "Okay, good." She nods, then presses on, lingering in the doorway for as long as possible. "Ethan read in a Granthorpe bulletin that there was a boy in a bad car accident?" "Yes. Todd Bartarach. He died this morning. He had a really bad head injury, I guess, and they couldn't save him." My muscles tighten reflexively. I still wonder whether Shane had anything to do with what happened to Todd. "Oh, honey, I'm sorry." She hugs me, and it feels really awkward. "Did you know him?" "Yes, but we weren't friends." "I'm sorry for his family, but I'm okay." I pull away and take a sip of tea. "Anyway, I'm gonna go to bed and stream some movies, so...
Can we talk about what Shane did to upset you?"
"Who says Shane did anything?" I retreat with my mug in hand. She levels a look at me. "Who else other than him ever makes you cry?" "Fair point," I think wryly. "I appreciate the concern, but if Shane and I have an issue, that's between us." Mom purses her lips but manages to stay quiet. "Thanks for the tea, Mom."
"It helps to talk."
"Not always," I say firmly. "Sometimes it's better to just keep calm and carry on, as the Brits like to say. What would really help me is if you could just act normal. Because I really am going to be fine." "Hey," Ethan says from the doorway. "Oh, God. Now there are two of them. They are so sweet, but it's suffocating. Shane is lucky to have his own house right now."
"How is everything?" he asks.
I don't scream, but I'd like to.
"She's okay," Mom says brightly. "Gonna watch some movies."
"Good, good. Listen, Ave, I got your text about changing your flight to Colorado. In terms of holiday plans, what are we thinking?"
"We're thinking I don't want to be in Shane's best friend's house for days.
A place where Shane could show up anytime.
Not sure, I say, forcing a smile. Some girls I know were talking about a girls' trip. I was thinking I might use the New Hampshire cabin and go cross-country skiing. It's true that a girl at Granthorpe who went to my high school suggested I come on a group outing over winter break. But I think the only reason she reached out is that I've been seen with Shane and Eric Sorensen. Those guys are part of the GU crowd everyone wants to join. So before I invest in new friendships, I want to see how people act next semester when they realize I'm not with Shane anymore.
You think you want to do that instead of Aspen? Ethan asks,
the skin between his brows pinching together to form a vertical line above his nose. I don't know yet. I just finished finals. I'm going to crash tonight and decide in the morning.
A girls' trip is nice, but not over the holidays, Mom says. The Hayworths...
You know Declan is Shane's best friend, right? I blurt, cutting her off. You remember that Shane lived with them when he was mad at us, right? My voice is sharper than I mean for it to be. Sorry. Just... Can you guys do me a favor? Don't try to push me into going somewhere I don't want to go. And also, please don't tell anyone anything about my plans.
Don't tell anyone?
Mom glances at Ethan and they exchange a look.
When you say anyone, Ethan says, tilting his head,
I mean anyone. I want to be left alone right now to do my own thing. My mom and Ethan share another look and Mom nods.
Okay, if you want certain people to leave you alone, we understand. Maybe Ethan and I will change our plans by a few days too.
Oh God. You're crazy if you do, but I can't stop you, I say.
Crazy?
My mom says, looking at me like I'm the crazy one.
Why would you stay in Boston when I won't even be here? And miss out on skiing in Aspen. It's silly. Just go. Have fun.
I'll join you guys there when I'm ready.
We're going to leave you alone right now so you can get some rest, Ethan says, tugging on my mom's arm.
They step back and close the door, but I can still hear them discussing me. I sigh and open my laptop. When I start my movie, I turn up the volume to drown out everything else. This is what you get for hooking up with your stepbrother.
Chapter 31. Shane. I hold out for 3 days. No texts. No calls. No unannounced visits to my dad's house. I want to make contact with Avery the way I want water after a hard workout. But I don't let myself have it. Props to her, too, for restraint. It's been radio silence. Let's see how long she holds out when we're in the same house. Declan confirms my family's flight and that his stepmother is picking them up from the airport. I book the next flight out of Boston. This way, there'll be no scene at the airport. Deck will pick me up on the down low, and then Avery and I will be in a house together for days. Just because I haven't talked to her doesn't mean I'm not caught up. I had someone get me the class stand-ins from her e-commerce class. She took the top spot, which is unheard of for a freshman. I'm proud of her. The flight to Colorado is smooth, and Declan's waiting for me in baggage claim. We shake hands and exchange the usual greetings. On the walk to the car, the conversation's casual, but when we reach his Jeep, he shifts gears.
Let's stop and get a drink. I've got a problem I need to run by you. Happy to help, but let's just talk on the way, I say. I want to get to the house. He pauses, looking at me over the roof. Did you come early to see her? I could lie, but there's no point. When I opted out of the Triple X celebration of my new membership in the Dark Knights, I told Declan the reason. There's only one woman I'm interested in, and, of course, Avery is not now, nor will she ever be, on a Dark Knight's menu. Yeah, I want to see Avery sooner rather than later. Declan taps the roof. Did you tell her that? I cock my eyebrow. No. Hate to tell you this, brother, but Avery didn't come with Ethan and Sherry.
What?
Why not?
I don't know.
They said she's coming later.
Dex starts to get in the car.
I do not.
When's she coming?
Tomorrow?
He stands again, looking across at me. I don't know.
I take out my phone and call my dad. It takes a few rings for him to pick up.
Where's Avery, Dad?
Hey, Shayna.
Ave decided to hang out and do her own thing for a few days. She's got an interview for the internship and wants to prepare.
I go still.
Is she on campus?
She's not. Right?
No.
In the background, I hear Sherry's voice.
Don't tell him anything. Remember what she said.
Gritting my teeth, I scowl. Our parents' interference is more than unwelcome. It's a fucking blood pressure raiser. I try to focus on the more important issue.
Dad, I don't want Avery on campus alone, not even during the day. She's not planning to be in her dorm by herself, is she?
Easy, Ethan says. No, she's not staying on campus.
When she needs to go to Granthorpe, she'll take my car. Before the interview, she has plans with friends.
What fucking friends?
Who?
Specifically.
Look, I'm not at liberty to share her plans.
Dad, listen, I know she might have told you not to tell me, but Shane,
don't ask me to break her confidence. I won't do it.
For fuck's sake.
I'll talk to you later. I swipe a finger over the screen to end the call.
Fucking hell, I mutter.
Declan raises his brows.
Sorry, I've got to go back.
At this point, I won't reach Boston until 3 or 4 in the morning. It's a complete pain in the ass, but at least Avery and I will be alone for our reunion.
Declan falls in step with me as I start toward the terminal.
What's going on,
Shane?
Seriously.
His tone is as grim as a fucking reaper.
She's coming eventually. Why wouldn't you wait for her here?
Eric's at the house. I convinced him to come. The three of us can talk business. He and I have to go back for practice in a few days, so this is really our only chance.
Yeah, the three of us will talk, but it's not urgent.
Declan scowls.
Now business isn't a priority? The thing that's urgent is that you see your little stepsister because she's in a snit about something?
What's her problem?
And why can't you just fly back tomorrow?
Snit. There's a word you don't hear every day.
You have been hanging out with Sorensen. Has he been at the GRE test booklets between plays?
Declan laughs, despite himself.
Sorensen once let slip he plans to go to grad school, and between extended bouts of silence, he occasionally quotes obscure literature. The guy's an enigma.
Come on, man, Dex says.
Stay.
Can't.
I don't want her there alone.
Where?
Granthorpe?
I nod, hustling across the street while traffic's light.
Term's over. What the hell does she need to do on campus?
When I don't answer, Declan blows out a frustrated breath.
You just got off the fucking plane.
Yeah, sorry for this bullshit pickup.
And listen, we'll still talk. I'll call you once I've booked a new flight.
Declan stops on the sidewalk just outside the terminal's sliding glass doors.
It's not a conversation for a public place.
We'll talk when I see you next.
All right.
I shake his hand briefly before I walk back inside. Not great to blow Declan off for Avery. I need to be better about that once things are back on track with her.
Inside, I get a seat on an outbound red-eye flight to Boston that's departing within the hour.
Good. I want to see Avery tonight, and I'm going to.
By the time I get back through security and to the gate, the flight is boarding.
Also good. I'm not in the mood to sit around in Colorado when she's in Massachusetts.
Once I'm seated, I start texting, knowing I don't have much time before the phone will have to go into airplane mode.
Shane, heard from my dad you got an interview for your internship. Congratulations. Proud of you.
Shane, don't go to campus alone, Ave. Not for any reason. If you have to go, let me be there.
The doors close, and the flight attendants start taking drink orders.
Shane, I want to see you. I'll be in Boston in the morning.
I hold the phone in a tight grip. I really want her to text me back before we take off.
I open email to sync the device before I go dock. I know it's unlikely Avery will have sent me anything, but back in high school, she sent me a few emails, usually when she had something to say that was longer than she wanted to text.
The sync's done by the time we start to pull away from the gate. I switch the phone to airplane mode, as directed, and glance at my inbox. Nothing from her. Just a few from Granthorpe that'll have links for grades. Sitting back, I try to rest. Sleep and I haven't been on friendly terms lately. I miss everything about having Avery in my bed. Sex the most, of course, but also how hard I crash afterward. Sleep was better when she was sleeping next to me. Apparently, lack of sleep catches up with me, because I crash for a few hours. When I wake, it's 4 a.m. Boston time. I open the GU emails to check my grades. There are no surprises. I passed everything with decent enough scores. The last email I open isn't course-related. Looks like spam. It's got rows of purple lines and only one line of text. You shouldn't touch what isn't yours, moron, or you might disappear. Like her, my very cherry, a very share. What the hell? What kind of bullshit is this? I zoom in and realize the dots making up the purple lines are tiny rose emojis. It takes a second for the email's message to hit me, and then my heart fucking stops. It's from Casanova, and he's threatening Avery.
Chapter 32. Avery. Darkness in the forest is different. It's full black, like charcoal briquettes. The exposed parts of the cabin's wood floor are cold, so I'm happy to be tucked in bed under a stack of handmade quilts. When the three of us are here, Ethan builds a big fire, and I'm missing that. I made a small one, but it's burned itself out. Tomorrow night, I'll use more wood. Cell service is spotty, and there's no cable in the cabin. So I came to bed with a paperback from the bookshelf, old school, as Ethan calls it. I hope Ethan and my mom had a good flight and are enjoying their first night in Aspen. But I'm really glad I stayed behind. The quiet calm of being surrounded by nature is soothing.
Shane. I take my phone into the first class bathroom, turn off airplane mode, and wait for it to connect and update. Come on, baby. Please have sent me a text. The phone buzzes, which gets my hopes up, but no. It's all texts from other people. I call Avery, and it goes straight to voicemail. Hey, it's me. Call me back. I got an email from Casanova, and I want to know you're all right. There's a chime overhead, and the fastened seatbelt light goes on. I ignore it and the turbulence that follows. I call Pops, and he picks up after half a dozen rings.
What's the matter?
The gravel in his voice drowns out his brogue. Sorry about the time. I need a favor. I need someone to go to Ethan's. Avery's alone, and the guy who's been stalking her may go after her there.
Where are you?
On a plane. I'll get to my dad's place in an hour, two at the latest. But I want someone to check on her now. And if your guy can stay to keep watch till I get there, even better. I'll cover whatever it costs.
This girl is expensive,
he mumbles. I thought the trouble was already dealt with. Apparently not. A flight attendant raps on the door, telling me I need to take my seat. Gotta go. I'll talk to you when I land. I haven't made it out of the airport before my grandfather calls to tell me Ethan's house looks empty. I call my dad immediately, but the call goes to voicemail. Understandable, given the time, but I want to smash something. I retrieve my car from long-term parking and peel out of the lot. On the highway, I try Sherry's number, which I've never called directly in my life. After a few rings, she answers, sounding half asleep.
Hello?
Sherry, it's Shane. I'm sorry to wake you. I think Avery's in trouble.
What?
Her sleep-roughened voice grows sharper.
What makes you say that?
She's not at your house. She's not responding to texts or calls, not even to say she's all right. And I got an email from Casanova that makes me think he might try to take her, if he hasn't already. My dad said she wasn't going to stay on campus. Do you have any reason to think she changed her mind about that?
An email from Casanova? How?
Sherry, can you answer me? Could she have gone to Granthorpe? If she did, I'm going to send campus police to her dorm.
No, she's not at Granthorpe.
Is she supposed to be at your house in Boston? Because she's not.
I sent someone there to be sure she's all right, and she's not home.
Are you... Is this a trick?
To get me to tell you where she is? Of course not, I snap. I regret it immediately. Sherry's cooperation is necessary. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to raise my voice. Just tell me where she is. I need to know. For the length of what feels like 100 hours, there's nothing but the sound of her breathing and my dad mumbling in the background. On my end, the loudest sound comes from my pounding heart. They know something. I can't let Sherry end the call without telling me.
No, I know, Sherry murmurs.
But she's talking to my dad, not me. Listen, I need you to tell me. We don't have time for this shit, I think, grinding my teeth. If she's in trouble, and I'm too late because I don't know where to go, that can't happen. Please, I'll do anything you want. I hate the desperation in my voice, but at the moment, it can't be helped. I'll do whatever it takes to find Avery, and Sherry needs to believe me that time may be running out.
Avery doesn't want you to know where she is, Shane. And she's fine. We talked to her. She's fine.
When did you speak to her?
Yesterday. When we landed.
Is she staying with someone? Who?
I can't talk to you about this, she hisses.
All right, do this. Call her right now. If she's all right, tell her I got a threatening email from Casanova and I'm worried about her. Tell her to call the police. Tell her to say whatever it takes to get them to come to wherever she's staying. And then tell her to call me. I'll go and get her, wherever she is. My sense of urgency convinces Sherry, or maybe it's just that I've suggested involving the police, which I would never do except in a dire emergency.
I'll call her.
I will, she says. If she's okay, call me back. Or just text me. I need to know you heard her voice and that she's safe.
I will.
Then the call ends. And there's dead air. The entire time I'm driving, I wait for Sherry's call or text. But none comes. I hope it's because she's talking to Avery. I reach the house, and it's dark. There's a sedan at the end of the driveway. When my headlights shine on, my grandfather himself emerges. I shove my door open and get out, shaking my head. I didn't mean for you to come yourself, Pops.
I know.
He comes over to shake my hand. Do you think this asshole took her? I don't know. I hope not. The phone rings, and I jerk it up. It's my dad. I swipe the screen. I'm here. Did Sherry talk to her?
No. We can't reach her.
Fuck! The world blurs around me. I put a hand on the Porsche to steady myself. If Casanova already has her, how am I going to find them? The police have searched for him for months with no luck. I have to figure out a way. I need to get Avery back. Where was she? Here? Or Shane, calm down.
She's not answering because there's terrible cell service where she is. She went to your Grandpa Morin's cabin in New Hampshire to cross-country ski for the weekend.
Did you actually get an email from Casanova? Of course. You think I'd make that up?
No.
I've got to go. I can get to the cabin in 2 hours, Shane.
Casanova couldn't know where she is. She's been in Boston and just drove to New Hampshire yesterday. There's no way he could have followed her from campus. She hasn't been there.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe she's fine. I'll go and make sure. I raise a hand to wave to my grandfather as he heads back to his car. I drop into the driver's seat of the Porsche and close the door.
Shane, why would Casanova email you?
That doesn't make sense. I don't know, I say, though a part of me does. Casanova and I share the same obsession. For a while, he wasn't able to take Avery because I was in the way. He was frustrated. Now I'm not in his way anymore, and he's gloating. As I back out of the driveway, I grimace. The thing that keeps hitting me over and over is I don't think he'd send an email unless he was sure I couldn't get to her in time.
Chapter 33. Avery. The trail is gorgeous. Nowhere is as beautiful as New Hampshire in the dawning light. I'm gliding along on fresh snow and work up a sweat by the time I reach the crumbling stone cabin from the 1800s. It's Shane's favorite destination on the trail. He showed me the spot on my first visit here. The distant sound of skis swooshing through snow makes me smile. Someone else is up early and on the trails. There's a cabin about a mile from ours that belongs to a sweet young family of four. We sometimes bump into them on winter weekends. I sit on the stones to rest. The approaching figure races through the trees. He's tall, probably the dad then. No. The man's dressed in head-to-toe black with goggles. It's not the kind of outfit I've ever seen the cheerful dad wear. It's not Shane either, too skinny. A scarf covers the man's lower face up to where his goggles hit, so I can't tell how old he is. From the way he moves, he's probably 20s or 30s. He's fit. When he spots me, he slows down. I smile, but only for a moment. The way he stares at me is intense, and he doesn't wave or say hello like someone would who's casually passing. The hairs on the back of my neck stand. Shane's words come back to me. If something feels wrong, assume it is. I keep my eyes on him, but I slide my hand into my coat's zipper pocket. Without looking down, I locate the knife with my fingers. I disengage the safety by feel and slip the knife out, keeping it concealed by my coat. The skier stops a few feet away. He raises his goggles, and his eyes are familiar. Who is he? When he pulls his scarf down, I finally recognize him. It's Daniel. Hi, Avery. My heart beats a thudding rhythm in my chest. What's he doing in our woods? He shouldn't be. Hey, Daniel. What are you doing here?
It was time. He looks around. I can't believe we're out here alone. I thought it was going to be so difficult to arrange. I had this elaborate plan. But then you made it easy.
My boots are free of the skis. His aren't. Can I knock him down and get past him? Outrun him back to the cabin and the car? No. Not unless he's injured. He bites the end of a glove and pulls it off, then repeats the move with the other. When he unzips his jacket, my heart slams against my ribs. Why is he undressing?
I was going to make it special. But you've been playing cum dumpster for your psycho stepbrother, he sneers. So you'll be right at home here in the dirt.
So vile. The words suck the air from my lungs. My heart hammers in my chest, and the world starts to blur around the edges. Don't you dare pass out. Other than taking sucking breaths, my body remains still as my mind races. No matter what disgusting things he says, I can't let it distract me. Daniel speaks again, but I don't hear him. For a second, my own thoughts drown everything else out. What would Shane tell me to do in this moment? Give Daniel time to completely undress? Or strike before that? He'll be able to maneuver better out of his ski clothes, but he'll also have less protection. Shane's voice comes rushing back, calm, consistent, firm. Wait for your moment, Avery. Wait for your moment. Why do this, Daniel? My voice doesn't crack, a small victory. He looks at me like I'm ridiculous.
Did you think you could just ignore me?
Scoffing, with a sharp shake of his head, he says, I'd have broken you already if not for him.
Todd was right. Morin's a thug. Like a dog with a bone. He didn't leave you alone for a second. Not at the party, not on campus, not even in his own house. Fucking frustrating. Until you left.
His sinister smile makes him look like a maniac.
Thank you for doing that.
I stare at him silently. Daniel is crazy. He is.
Wait for your moment. It did make for a better game, I guess.
Daniel stretches his arms out magnanimously.
You saved his life by leaving.
Did I? What did you plan to do?
Wait for your moment.
He grins and looks wolfish as he does.
He jerks the goggles and scarf off and drops them on his discarded jacket. Only a